Well, today we're going to talk about the Social Work with Combat Veterans Certificate Program, which is based in Michigan State University's School of Social Work. And we have several people to discuss that with us. Glenn Stutzke is a senior clinical instructor in the school. Glenn, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
And Brian Hanna is a combat veteran who's participating in the program. Brian, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Joel Evers is an MSW student pursuing this certificate and this program. And Joel, it's good to have you here.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Joining us on the phone from the beautiful Upper Peninsula in Michigan is Tina Blaschke-Thompson. She's the coordinator of the Combat Veterans Certificate Program. She's also statewide blended and weekend MSW programs coordinator, and like Glenn, a senior clinical instructor. Tina, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about the program. What is it? How and why did it come about?
So really the catalyst for this was my personal experience with my husband, who is a combat veteran. He served for 8 years in the Marines and deployed to Iraq, and we started dating the month he came home from that deployment. So the past 13 years, I've had to bear witness to the many struggles that he's experienced in that transition home and no longer being military, now being a civilian. So that really was the catalyst, in that I had many years of social work education under my belt. But in all those years, I never learned a single thing about the military population or the challenges that they experience. So Glenn and I decided that something needed to be done about this, and that this gap needed to be filled. So that was really the catalyst behind us deciding to build these three courses for our social work students.
And can we describe the issue a bit? Brian and I were talking a little bit before we started, but let's not assume everybody's aware of what PTSD is. And Brian, perhaps you want to start. What is PTSD, and how does it impact you?
It comes down to each individual person and how it affects them differently. I can tell you from my own personal experience, it's just experiencing, I would say, trauma in many different forms. It's also, dealing with being in a combat environment for an extended period of time, of how it kind of changes you as a person. I kind of think of it as like the new normal. That's kind of how I deal with it. I don't exactly feel like the same person as I was before, but it's the new normal as I am now. There's certain things that kind of trigger my memories or anxieties or everything that kind of reminds me back to when I was in the combat situation. And there's not a day that goes by where I don't think about war. I mean, I do. And there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about the people that I was over there serving with, and I miss them. And I miss some of that adrenaline pumping, situations where I was trained to do that. So I think it's just a combination of, experiencing combat firsthand, experiencing loss, experiencing things from exciting to funny to devastating, all wrapped into one long experience. And then trying to pick up the pieces when you come back and try to reintegrate into civilian life and figure out what the new normal is. And also try to deal with the guilt and survivor's guilt of some of the things that you experienced when you're home.
And I'm guessing it's therapeutic for you to be involved in this program in some ways too.
Yeah, it is. It is. I originally got involved because as a favor to Tina, I was friends with Tina, lived next door to them and her husband Kevin. And we, had great time, being neighbors, and Tina put the call out looking for combat veterans with experience that wanted to participate in this program. It sounded like a great idea. It sounded very unique. How often do combat veterans have the opportunity to not only share their stories, but kind of use it for the good to help train those that are going to help combat veterans? It's a very unique and holistic approach, I think, to share our stories and use them for good, but it's also cathartic for at least me to do that, because I talked about things that I've never talked about before and really don't talk about since. So it's a good experience.
And Joel Evers, what about you? What are you finding valuable about this program, and what attracted you to it as a student?
Yeah, so what brought me to the program originally is I have a lot of really close friends and family members who have served. so both active duty and currently in veteran status at this point. So that was the original pull and swing to get involved with the program. It's really hard to describe the journey that the course takes you on. We really start off by, you enter the program expecting to learn something, and I find that at this point in the program, I'm really leaving feeling something, like that passion is awake, and I really want to contribute, and I really want to help. And we talked a lot about a lot of the empirical research and some of the, like, the formal articles that go behind, like, different things that veterans struggle with and how we can support them in their journey. And then it really has a lot of personal notes too, like being able to hear Brian's story and all the veterans who were willing to share. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, like the journeys that we've done going to like Washington, D.C. or visiting the Save a Warrior program down in Ohio. So a lot of really personal notes in addition to the reflective pieces, weekly reflecting on what we're learning and how we're growing and how it's changing us as people. I would say that I'm a totally different person than I was even a couple months ago.
One of the things that's unique about our approach here pedagogically is that people like Brian and the veterans are really the instructors in this first course, embracing the stories of war. Tina and I on record are, the instructors, but we don't lecture. We don't have big research papers and quizzes. It's a narrative, immersive approach where the students, like Joel, are following the veterans through the military cycle. We've interviewed them extensively to share their experience about how they came to join the military, what their time was like getting prepared to be deployed, what their time was out in the field in combat, and then especially how it has gone, in terms of returning home. So we do that because we want to move students as close to what they have experienced as possible so they will build empathy and be able to have a bridge to be able to listen and to be able then to be of some assistance.
Tina, I'm sure you're ready to jump in. What are you thinking at the moment?
Yeah, so I think it's really important for us to highlight the fact that we focus on combat trauma throughout the three courses, in that if you look at programs across the country, there's quite a few that are more broad in that they focus on military social work. And we were very intentional in our decision to focus on the experience of military service members who have that combat experience, because military social work is very broad. And yes, there's a lot of commonality in terms of those experiences, but the experience of combat is very unique, and it brings about a different set of challenges that need to be worked through when they return home. So that decision was very intentional, and we push beyond post-traumatic stress, PTS, and that we really look at combat trauma and how it can result in not just post-traumatic stress, but also moral injury, something that is becoming a bit more acknowledged, but still not very heavily researched. And clinicians don't know a whole lot about it. I'm shocked in my interacting with folks in the social work field who've been working with veterans for decades, and they have no idea what moral injury is. So moral injury being the guilt, the shame, the grief that even Brian alluded to a few minutes ago in terms of the survivor's guilt and the grief that goes along with that. That's very different than post-traumatic stress, which is the body's physical reaction to trauma. So the nightmares, flashbacks, the hypervigilance, that's very different. And we're really pushing students to tease apart those different consequences of combat trauma and how they need to be addressed in very different ways.
And when we were looking at focusing this program in the early stages, we did a survey of all the different, colleges and universities, especially schools of social work for programs for veterans. And to our knowledge, this is the first one in the country as far as a certificate program that focuses on combat veterans and helping to prepare students to move into that field and work with that population.
And Joel, tell us some more about how this course is impacting you and what you'll take away from it.
Wow, it's really hard to sum that up in a really short thing just because of the way that this journey has been I know for all of us students who have been involved in the first cohort going through this program. And I think really it's shaped my mind and my heart ultimately to have that compassion and to have that awareness and to have that empathy piece that everyone who we work with in the veteran world is going to have different and unique experiences. And our job as social workers and as people who genuinely care about them and how they are in the world is to be able to bring about a sense of peace in addition to compassion and empathy, and then with the ultimate goal of healing and moving towards healing. And so throughout the journey of the course, we've learned about, you know, all of the many different things that veterans go through, why they enlist, you know, pre-combat, during combat, post-combat. And then a big part that's really connected with me is the whole concepts associated with healing and how do we get there and how do we move towards that. So that's really what it's been foundational in that way, that I feel I have a solid foundation of skills and tools and concepts and passion within me that I want to bring to the table when I work in this field in the future.
Yes.
I wanted to add one thing to this conversation. The military spends a lot of money and a lot of expertise and a lot of time in preparing people to go to war when it's necessary. And for very important reasons, because it's not a natural thing for an 18, 19-year-old to go off and be put in situations where they have to kill people. And but on the other end, when they come out, there's not the same dedication, commitment of time and money to help people make the transformation, you know, back. You can be there, and when the time comes to an end, in 48, 72 hours, all of a sudden, you know, you might be in a mall shopping with your parents or something like that. And so we're looking at wanting to find a way to have a much bigger investment. These people have made, in many ways, incredible sacrifices. We need to invest as a community, as a government, just as much effort in helping them come back as we have in preparing them to go. One of the things Tina and I looked at was throughout history, when civilizations and tribes and different societies had to send off people to fight. And when they came back, you see oftentimes there was ceremonies and rituals, taking time to welcome people back, taking time to allow them to do, you know, whatever was necessary in order to be able to shed some of these things and to be healed and to take off the armor and to move from being warrior to being back into a family member and a member of society.
Yeah. Brian, what do you think the general public maybe misunderstands most about PTSD, and how can the average person help you when they aren't even sure you're going through it?
You've shared some things before, Brian, about what you would like future social workers to know.
I think one of the things I tell the students, because after the courses, there are times where the combat veterans get together with actual students and talk about the class and experiences and actually meet, you know, person to person. And one of the messages that I always give to the students, and I think it applies to your question too, is you don't necessarily have to be a veteran or a combat veteran to assist somebody that's gone through that experience. You don't have to be, in my opinion, a combat veteran to understand a combat veteran. You just have to show empathy and listen and understand and, you know, show those traits and things that, you know, they learned through their training and through this course. And the reason why I say that is, you know, it's a two-way street. Me as a combat veteran, I can't expect to go to a restaurant and expect the person that's going to be my server to be a fellow combat veteran. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. That's not how reality is. Is it great when they are? Absolutely, because, hey, somebody that relates to me and gets me right off the bat. But we as human beings, we can still do that by showing empathy and listening anyway. And that's one of the big takeaways I tell the students, and I think in public in general, when it comes to somebody that have gone through these experiences, I think anybody can relate to anyone as a human being. You just find what that is through empathy, listening, building rapport, and then you go with it. But that's one of the takeaways, because I remember talking to some students, and one of the big comments that I see a lot is, well, I'm not a combat veteran. How are they going to want to talk to me? And I don't think that's the case. I think it's more of human beings relating to human beings, and we all have trauma in our lives. Obviously, combat veterans and trauma experience there is unique, but there are similarities in when it comes to trauma and human beings in general.
Well said. Tina, what are you thinking?
I'm wondering if Joel can expand a little bit on the two trips that we took, because I think that really added a richness to the student experience, especially during the fall and spring semesters.
Yeah, I'd love to. So the first trip we went on was to Washington, D.C., and there we went to the National Mall, and we went to all the different monuments and multiple different museums. And in addition to that, we had a lot of conversations over the course of that experience about how we can integrate what we were learning in the classroom setting and then bringing it there and seeing it and reading about it and experiencing it in a way that really connected with some of the heartstrings, so to speak. So that was, I left there. It's hard to describe. I was just blown away. And then more recently, we went to SAW, which is the Save a Warrior Foundation down in Ohio, and they work with veterans on a holistic-based healing, and they've been doing some incredible things down there. And we were fortunate enough to be able to stay there a couple nights and kind of get to see the work that they're doing. And it's really rooted in healing, really rooted in compassion. And when I left that place, and in conjunction with everything that we've been doing, like everything within me was like, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to serve in the world. This is how I want to help people. This is how I want to contribute. Just seeing and integrating everything we've learned through the journey of the course and having those direct firsthand experiences where we weren't only learning, we were experiencing. We were talking with people. We were meeting them. We were shaking their hands. Really, really powerful.
This is a pervasive issue, right?
It is. And that number is likely a very, very low in terms of the reality of how significant of an issue this is. And that the 20 a day does not include Texas, California, or Florida. And we know that there's very large military and veteran populations in those states. And for me, that's what this whole thing is really about. And it really is what motivates Glenn and I to keep pushing the limits, to breaking outside the mold, and really pushing students to develop a deep care and concern for helping veterans. For me, this is really a very personal thing, in that before my husband, Kevin, went to Save a Warrior, unbeknownst to me, because veterans are really good at pretending everything's okay, my husband was actively suicidal. And this was when we were already teaching these courses. So knowing that this was happening in my own home and I had no idea, really shook me to my core and really reinforced the need for us to be focusing on the issues that we are in terms of the experience of combat and how that layers trauma on top of trauma that has happened in other areas of their life. For me, the certificate program is about saving lives, of pushing students to see behind the mask that so many veterans try to maintain, that there's a lot of hurt that's happening behind that mask.
One of the things Tina and I were looking at early on was how stable this rate of suicide has been. And I believe she's absolutely correct in terms of it being low, one, because of those other major states being left out. But oftentimes, too, the means of suicide might be a car crash, and it doesn't get reported you know, it gets reported as being an accident. So we really don't know the real number. But we were wondering, since Vietnam, we've had a pretty good idea what PTSD is, and a lot of treatments have been developed for it, but yet that number still has been stable. So we were wondering, what else is going on in there? And that's when we came across moral injury, where people get involved in situations where they see things or do things or don't do things. And even if they're, you know, justified under the rules of engagement or whatever, that can still have a real impact on a person's individual identity, and especially their moral identity. And just as we began to gather more stories, we began to hear that that moral injury is one of the engines that's driving the suicide rate. It has some similar symptoms with PTSD, but we've been working on trying to tease that out because it's something different. Therefore, it needs a different approach. And that's what we're hoping to promote, not just to these students, but even to the broader professional field in time.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So, Brian, can you share some of your issues with us when you came back from Afghanistan?
It was really interesting. So when I was in Afghanistan, I saw combat right away. And, you know, I was trained for it, dealt with it. And I started to notice that, you know, I reacted and I did exactly what I was trained for, and I was okay during. It was after, during the down times, when I started to think about things. That's when, you know, I started to notice that, you know, more of the issues of combat is when I was idle thinking about it rather than reacting to whatever it is that we had to do at the time. And that was a pretty interesting concept that I learned firsthand. It wasn't really necessarily during the combat, it was afterwards where you have downtime and you're stuck thinking about it. And then, you know, I remember being over there, you know, excited, you know, adrenaline pumping, doing my job. And then as time kept going on, it started to get old and, you know, hey, I can't wait to go home. Can't wait to, you know, have a beer again and a hamburger, things like that. And then, when I got home on leave, yeah, I started to notice I had some issues, you know, hyper aware, hyper alert, you know. I had to have tobacco with me at all times. You know, when I was overseas, I was chewing and smoking at the same time. I mean, it's just stuff to get by with it. And then when I got towards the end of my deployment, it was just all about surviving, you know, and making it to the end. And then when you did, you get home. And, you know, we had some, you know, debriefing and some getaways with the military. We had, like, these yellow ribbon ceremonies, and we would go to some classes, and, you know, we would have, you know, a coming home ceremony, things like that. But, you know, we would have these things, and then afterwards you're like, here I am, you know. And a lot of the things that they talked about at the yellow ribbon, of things to watch out for, they did that before we went. And, you know, these are some of the things that you might do as a reaction to PTS and experiencing combat. And I was like, I'm not going to do that stuff. No way. And I came back, and I had a pretty alert moment when I went, I'm doing every single one of those things to a T. And that's when I realized I needed to get some help and use my support structure, which I'm very fortunate to have. But I did all that. So coming back, it's kind of like the movie Hurt Locker, where the main character comes back after dealing with some really serious things, and they're just standing in the grocery store looking around, perplexed. It's real. That's an actual thing. Yeah, it's every single day I think about that experience. And it was really interesting is when I was over there and getting towards the end, all I wanted to do was come home. And then being home for a couple weeks, all I wanted to do was go back. Mm-hmm. My entire being was, I would say, rewired to civilian life became more difficult than overseas. Overseas is live, eat, sleep, kill if you have to, survive. It was very easy. React, you know, and you get used to that. And that's when I realized, hey, I might need to get some assistance here. But I agree with the moral injury concept is new to me, but all the things that I've been hearing about through this course is very accurate to what I deal with. You know, on a daily basis, I think about my military experience, especially my combat experience, every single day. The shame, the guilt, the wishing I can change things. And then there's good memories too, but the shame, the guilt, and all those things, it's a daily thing. And what I have to do is to remind myself I did the best I could and then try to move on. But it's like a repeat. It's kind of like having a tape on a loop, and that's kind of like what it feels like to have that experience.
People understand post-traumatic stress pretty well, but moral injury is a relatively new concept. So a couple things that our veterans talk about, and they didn't even label it as moral injury. And when we first started these courses and interviewing the veterans, moral injury wasn't even at the top of the list of things that we were even looking at. But over time, being able to recognize some of these experiences is possibly being what has caused some of the suffering that these veterans are dealing with. So one example, one of our veterans talks about during his convoys, young Iraqi children swarming around the Humvees, begging for water and for candy and for food. But they were putting themselves in danger of being run over by these Humvees. And after months and months of this happening, this particular veteran he had enough of it, that they were getting in the way. And he started throwing water bottles, full water bottles, at these children to get them to get away. Because the water bottle, yes, it's going to hurt, but it's less dangerous than getting run over. And he talked about in his interview how that really haunts him now that he has children of his own. So some of these things don't even come to light until many years later, when their personal experiences start to trigger some of these experiences that they had in combat. Another example that one of our veterans talks about was being on patrol in Iraq. And one of his buddies was teasing him because he was first in line, but he's not good enough to be number one. So they switched spots. And within minutes, his buddy who took that front spot was shot and killed by a sniper. And just the day before, he got a Red Cross message that his baby was born. So this is the guilt that this particular veteran has to live with. And that's very different than the flashbacks and nightmares and hypervigilance that are symptomatic of post-traumatic stress. That this guilt can really tear someone up and really make them question if they made the right choice, if they had done things differently, and whether they're still a good person because of those choices they made.
And in some situations, it's completely impossible and there's no win. Another example that was shared with us was also on a convoy. And this veteran was at the back of the convoy, and his job was, you know, to protect it, and he had the weaponry to do that. And they had been up a long time. It was very hot, very dusty. It was hard just to keep staying awake and staying alert. And all of a sudden, there was someone that was trying to cross the convoy, and which wasn't something that was allowed. And so he received the order, you know, to eliminate that threat, to take them, you know, to take them out of the equation. But it was dusty and hot, and he was spinning around and trying to find them to immediately, you know, execute that order. And he was having trouble locating them. And then just as he was about to, he got the order that, you know, to stand down, not to do that, because it ended up not, you know, being a threat. And I think, Tina, was this one with the car that had a little boy in it too? But anyway, mm-hmm. It became clear that this was not a threat at all. But he struggled both with, one, I just about killed an innocent person, but also I put my fellow comrades in danger because I couldn't find this person quick enough to eliminate the threat. So it was like a there was no way to win as far as just on a kind of like on the moral basis. And so that was just one incident.
Another really powerful example, I'm sorry, because this one just really, it haunts me in very significant ways. Hearing from a veteran who, he's not part of our class. He actually is based in California. He talked about how during his time in Iraq, he had to make some really hard decisions that included the death of children for various reasons. And one of the very first things he did when he came home was he got a vasectomy. That he did not feel worthy of bringing life into this world after the life that he took. And that's different than post-traumatic stress, right? That's moral injury in his way of coping with that.
There's been a big disconnect between the general population, the civilian population, and the military. And social work, one of the core things that's important to us is connection and connecting people. I mean, it's not just about programs. It's not just about curriculum or different methods and things like that, but it's about connecting people and reconnecting people. And to do that, you have to go through some of this incredible guilt and shame and other things as well. But that's something that we have as a focus in the third course, which is healing the wounds of war. So it's not that there's like it's not like in the medical field where you're applying a certain medicine, you know, or doing an operation. It's about the very core relationships, which have to do with all of us just being human to human. That's why I appreciate what Brian has said. You don't have to have a special degree or something like that. You know, we're human and you're human, you know, and we can make that kind of connection and we can help one another.
That's kind of like that saying about be kind to everyone because everybody's going through something.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. One of the outgrowths of this Combat Veterans Certificate Program, we have the three courses, Embracing the Stories of War, Sharing the Burden of War, and Healing the Wounds of War. And that first class is to create awareness and to build empathy. It talks about the military cycle, like we mentioned earlier, about when you're recruited or you enlist, preparing to be deployed, being deployed, and coming home. We had the idea that what if we could also have a musical representation of that journey? And so working with some seniors over at the College of Music, Ryan Jones, who's a composition major, and Ryan Gearhart, who's a performance major with the bassoon, they have created an original piece of music called Semper. It's three movements for piano and bassoon, and we've built an entire evening around that called Embracing the Stories of War. It's going to be the Sunday, the 28th of April this month at 8 p.m. It's free. We're also going to be having a moderated discussion with some veterans. Brian is actually going to be one of the veterans there. We're having a powerful poem, untitled, written by a Vietnam veteran. It's going to be shared from the stage, as well as some other audio and video stories that are being shared by veterans. We're going to have community groups out in the lobby that do work with veterans. And it is a cooperative and co-sponsored event between the College of Music, the College of Social Science, the School of Social Work, the MSU Libraries, the College of Nursing, and the Student Veterans Resource Center, all here at MSU. So it's, I don't think there's ever been a piece of music that's been created, you know, around a college course. So we're very excited about this.
So the first class, like you said, is open to anyone at MSU, regardless of their discipline. So we've had a mixture of our MSW students as well as those in our undergrad social work program. We've had folks out of criminal justice, human development and family studies, sociology, really anywhere within the university, people can sign up for that very first class.
And that's undergraduate and graduate. It's that special mm-hmm. category in the 490s sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then from there, the students, the MSW students who want to specialize further in working with this population, they can apply to take the second and third classes. And that's a smaller group of our students. This year we'll have 8 MSW students graduating who have taken all 3 courses and had a specialized internship working with veterans, as well as a few other students who elected to take the other classes for other reasons. And that's a very unique group in that they see this as their future career. Or as the first class is just to gather that kind of foundational knowledge.
The other thing we'd like to, you know, we'd like people to begin to become aware of is that we have had quite a few requests from professionals out in the field who are already working with veterans, not just social workers, but psychologists, nurses, and others in the helping professions. And so this coming summer, for the first time, we're having a non-credit registration process where those people who are out in the field already working, want to get some further education and training, can take these courses, not for credit, and at a greatly reduced rate. Now, you know, they're not going to have to do any kind of internship. They already have their degree. They don't need any more credits, but they're going to be able to be a part of this experience. So we're opening it up so members who are already out there in the community working can have this available to them as well.
I think the uniqueness of the course, and I mean, the big theme for me is just uniqueness of immersing the students and whoever takes the courses to actual real stories and real lives of people that have gone through this. I think that the reason why it's so unique is this is the first time I've heard of an outlet like this, where somebody has the opportunity to see these things firsthand without dealing with it for the first time. You know, I think, you know, I've talked to, you know, plenty of counselors that are, you know, do very well in their jobs. But I'm not so certain of, you know, how often is this opportunity where somebody actually gets to see this and experience this first on a learning basis before you deal with it for the first time? You know, it's a really big key training thing, in my opinion. Because, you know, quite often, you know, in those certain situations, and it's, I'm coming from a, you know, an opinion, but when I'm dealing with a counselor, I don't know them. You know, and that we're feeling each other out when we first talk. You know, it's always a cold contact. But for the persons that are going to be doing this, it may not necessarily be such a cold contact first start because they get to experience this firsthand and actually follow certain veterans that they pick to do this with. And I think uniqueness is a big theme here for me.
Brian made a really good point there, and that was actually part of our motivation early on. I read a letter that a combat veteran had written. It was just in a magazine. It was about his experience, unfortunately, with a social worker, our field. And he had gone to try to get some help because that's a huge step there. Most don't make even that step. So that very first contact, like Brian's talking about, is so important. And he said, when I first began to share about my experiences in combat, I could see the fear come into her eyes. Mm-hmm. And I stopped immediately and I changed the subject because I'm a protector and a defender. When I read that, I got very angry and I, you know, told Tina about it and I said, that has got to change. So like Brian's talking about, we give an opportunity for people to experience as close as possible so that when they have that first contact, it's not as cold as it might be. Yeah, they don't know maybe that person, but it's like, I do know a little bit about you.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, absolutely. One of the things that I'm apprehensive about is being judged. And I don't mean it in a negative way. I mean, I've seen firsthand when I've shared some stories with some people that weren't prepared for it, and I've seen the look on their faces, and then I just stopped talking. And that had a fear in me that is, I can't talk about this stuff because I'm going to scare people. And then how do I get this out? So I can only get it out with those that understand it. So then who do I turn to? I turn to other fellow combat veterans, and then we go down this, you know, the cycle of sharing each other's experiences. That's why when, you know, combat veterans have a fantastic bond when we get together, we can talk about things freely and openly without being judged. And I think that's where this course is fantastic, as being a, you know, gap filler in trying to fill that divide. But absolutely, I can't tell you how many times I've tried to talk about certain things, and then I've seen the facial reactions of people, and then I just stop, and then I learn really quickly, I just don't talk about it.
To kind of piggyback off of that, I can't even imagine how, because this is what my dream is, to work with this population, and to not have had the experience of this course, and deliberately calling it an experience, because it's not just about learning, it's the experience of learning, and I can't imagine clinically where I would be, and it makes a lot of sense too. There's not a huge population per se in the grand scheme of society that is combat veterans, and so there's certainly a certain level of disconnect between civilians and veterans, in addition to clinicians and veterans, and to be able to bridge that gap in an empathetic way, like Glenn was speaking to, or to be able to embrace those stories in a way that's honoring their service and who they are and what they did and what they bring to the table, like what they want to work on, and hold that space, I think is so critical. And the research really shows that there's really good evidence to support the idea that it's not necessarily the clinical interventions that we use, it's the level of connection between the client or the person sitting in front of you and the provider that determines successful outcomes. So that connection piece is so critical. And to be able to hold that space for people, so critical. And I think that this class has really offered me a way to be able to do that.
There has to be a safe outlet for these opportunities to get this stuff out there. I mean, if you look at, you know, our current society right now, it's a lot of, you know, there's appropriate times for graphic things, and in workplace environment or public environment, that's not one of those times. So there has to be some form of outlet for people that have experienced these kinds of trauma to try to get these things out. Now, when that opportunity is and when it is, it's really up to that person and when they want to do that. But again, this course is important because that helps, you know, the workers that are going to be interacting with this population to provide a very needed outlet to get rid of those feelings of shame and guilt and things that they can't change. And when saying to themselves, I did the best I can, isn't cutting it anymore. Because let's be real, a lot of these things that have happened are graphic in nature. And when we have, you know, kind of like a societal norm where certain graphic nature things are not appropriate to talk about, then you start to think, well, this is never something I can appropriately talk about. And then you start to think, you know, you have shame and guilt from that too. So that's an excellent way to provide an outlet for those that are going to be working with this population.
This is MSU Today. You've been listening to our conversation on the Social Work with Combat Veteran Certificate Program in MSU's acclaimed School of Social Work. And Tina Blaschke-Thompson is the coordinator of the Combat Veterans Program. And as we close, Tina, what would you like people to know about this program?
That the work we are doing is all about saving lives. That Glenn and I, as the instructors on record, this has become our mission. This is our focus, and the time and energy we're putting into this, we really sincerely hope can help impact and lower that 20 veteran a day number.
Well, Tina, thank you for telling us about it and for this important work you're doing.
Thank you.
And Glenn, what are your final thoughts? Glenn Stutzke is a senior clinical instructor at the School of Social Work.
Well, I really like to just echo what Tina has said. This isn't just academic courses. This isn't just like a certain number of credits that we want to get done or something like that. It goes beyond that. It goes into our hearts and from our hearts. And it's just, it's genuine and it's very authentic. And maybe down the road there even be people that will be offended by that, but we honestly don't care because this is just that important.
Thank you, Glenn. Brian Hanna, combat veteran.
It's raw, it's real, and it's unique. It's a great opportunity for those that want to understand the combat veteran psyche and who are going to work with that population. It's a fantastic course, and I'm proud to have helped out with it.
And Brian, thank you for sharing your intimate details with us. I think we all got a lot out of it.
Thanks.
Joel Evers, who's pursuing his Master's of Social Work at MSU, what are you wanting us to know?
I guess I would say to anyone in the helping profession or anyone who just has an interest and deep desire to help and serve those who have served, that this course is for them, that this is about healing, this is about honoring service, this is about connection, this is about empathy. And I know that I'm forever changed as a result of the work that Tina and Glenn and all the veterans who were so willing to share have set forth through this course.
Again, it's Michigan State University's The Social Work with Combat Veteran Certificate Program inside MSU School of Social Work. Just search for that at socialwork.msu.edu. You'll get all the information you want and need. And I'm Russ White. Thank you for joining us on MSU Today.